At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only.
Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
My Family Thinks I'm Crazy, a podcast where I, your host, try to give you some tips on how you can explain all this weird, wild, crazy conspiracy stuff to the people you love most. Because that's what I've been trying to do for the past 10 years with no success.
I've been telling everybody that our government is shady. But every time I do, my family thinks I'm crazy. The hollow earth, UFOs, aliens invading. Fluoride in the water, they spray our skies daily. When I talk about these things, they think I'm crazy. There's no escaping anymore, the evil that we're facing. Illuminati mind control, they're sacrificing babies. The end of days, but anyways, my family thinks I'm crazy.
What, they don't want to listen to you? They don't want to listen. They don't want to hear it. They're just like, oh, here we go, Mark. Off again with your...
Mark being Mark again.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, that's the thing about podcasts is when you're on the air, and it's like therapy, you know? If I can't talk to my family about this stuff, I'll talk to you, Matt, and all our listeners.
You'll just tell your whole podcast.
Yeah. So who are we talking about today, Matt?
Candace Owens thing is reality TV is so entertaining, you know, that I haven't been so entertained even by something, you know, what they say, fictional, something made out of Hollywood or whatever. I haven't been entertained by anything like this in a very long time, you know. And when you say, well, yo, this is real life, and you get into it from, you know, we say a Great Mystery Philadelphia angle, it's like, holy cow, holy cow. This is, you know, I wanted to say, like, I think she's fulfilling prophecy. I think she's the woman of the wilderness, that she's the woman clothed the sun in biblical prophecy, who's going to take the deceiver of the nations and throw them in the bottomless pit and bring about the fulfillment of the 1,000 years of peace, millennial prophecy, you know? Because, right, y'all could think I'm crazy or whatever, you know, and if it don't come to pass, yeah, you know, I'm sitting here smoking a spliff, just busting it up with y'all, saying some crazy shit, whatever, right? What? Time might tell. Time might tell, like, damn. She, as a student of history, mystery, and prophecy, 40 years, I wouldn't be surprised if this is it. I ain't seen no woman clothed with the sun. I ain't seen no woman from the wilderness even wrestle with the deceiver of the nations like she is. And the way, the leverage she has on them right now, she's going to throw them in the bottomless pit and bring about 1,000 years of peace. She got them sweating. She ain't sweating, you know? She got a smile on her face.
You just heard today's guest, author, mystic. He joins me, Mystic Mark, here on the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast. Thank you for tuning in and enjoy this conversation with Ross Ben. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast. And joining today for the second time, his return appearance here on the show, is a man who I have had the honor of meeting in person. He was kind enough to welcome me to his home in the great city of brotherly love, Philadelphia. Ross Benn returns to the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast. He is an author. He is an artist. He is an inspirational person who has certainly inspired my investigation into local history and what's just sort of beyond the surface edge. So without further ado, Ross Benn, it's always a pleasure to hear from you and an even greater pleasure to speak with you. So thank you for joining me. And for the audience who might not be familiar with you, give us a little update on what you've been up to, how you've been staying busy.
Well, I haven't been busy. I've been, well, I'll say busy healing, you know. I've been on that growth through grief cycle. You know, my son passed away about 2 years ago. And it's just been a journey of doing my best to keep good relationship with my family, you know, my surviving children and my wife and the I am in that sandwich generation where I have elders I got to look out for, as well as, you know, the future generations. So I haven't been active online for a while. And, you know, when I got your invite, I was going to actually decline it. You know, like I've been getting invites to speak on certain things and I'll be like, nah. But when I thought about the title of your show, My Family Thinks I'm Crazy, I had to like reflect and like, yeah, well, my family thinks I'm crazy. I'm even questioning my own sanity lately. You know, what a opportune show to reflect on. Even though I haven't been active online, I have been paying attention to world events and what's going on in the world. And I got some crazy thoughts, you know?
I want to hear them, Ross, because I feel like my instincts are to talk about what the audience could be familiar with. But, you know, it's so much
but
more.
You know, I would love to start with that, too. I mean, yeah, I'm going to follow because let's give the people what they want. And if you know your audience might appreciate something I share, we could start with that. Because what I have, the crazy-ish I have to say, it is not a lot, but I would like to articulate it now because I think it can potentially be, like we say, some prophetic-ish, you know, like, holy cow, look, you know. So
yeah, please get it up.
What you want to talk about?
Well, I, you know, there's only so much I can gather since you haven't been posting much. So I just wanted to talk about your overall thesis and then also how that year of eclipses that we had, or the eclipses that we had in 2017 and 2024,
Trumpian eclipses.
Yeah, how that's foreshadowed this world we're in now. So it sounds like it could be related to your thoughts.
It is in a way. It is. It's like we say some end time prophetic type stuff. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, and for people who are just learning about you, Ross, like you've done tons of podcasts. If this is someone's first introduction to Ross Benn, I would recommend pausing the pod and go get a little bit more familiar with this man's body.
I do have a Ross Benn channel on YouTube, Ross Benn 188.
Well, and I make that clarification just to set the table for the audience. Like your book, Great Mystery Philadelphia, as someone who owns it and has read it, like, it is a way of understanding this prophetic manipulation that is going on through government bodies, government scale, like a countrywide scale, to the point
Global scale.
Yeah. Where they're coordinating with other countries and making these sort of secret moves. And, you know, sometimes it comes in the form of architecture and art. Other times it comes in the form of well-crafted events that are completely fabricated. It's
manipulating timelines.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Yeah. I mean, manipulation of timelines isn't anything new. It actually was going on before the Roman world and before the Christian world. You know, it goes back to, you know, this notion of history and prehistory, right? And if you study what they call the Titanocomy, the clash of the Titans, and what was that really? That we know, even though the names are recorded in Greco-Roman literature and thus have Greco-Roman names, the Titanocomy was their account of the wars in ancient Egypt, wars between the Netter, or the gods, Asar and Ptah, specifically. Okay, the Memphites versus the Thebans. And so, why it is difficult for us to view what I guess they call prehistoric or early historic history as a, what you say, a continuous timeline, right? That is leading up to our present reality is because a big part of the timeline manipulation that's going on, it's ancient, it's nothing new. And the war between the Memphites and the Thebans in ancient Egypt, there was a lot of manipulating of timelines, right? And that kind of evolved or grew into the Roman timeline manipulation, which involved the Romans attempting to anathematize the Book of Enoch, you know, like make it as if it never existed. And then they could kind of write or script their own prophetic timeline. And so, you know, what we know of as Philadelphia today, as a city, as, you know, a phenomena of history, is a manipulation of prophetic timelines. Okay? Many people think Philadelphia is named that because it means brotherly love, and this idea that William Penn was attempting to invoke brotherly love. But if you want to pull back the veil and study a little bit, what you realize is that Philadelphia is a manifestation of what is known historically as William Penn's holy experiment. Okay? William Penn's holy experiment, where he was attempting to fulfill prophetic prophecy of Revelations chapter 3, the name of which is the prophecy of the Church of Philadelphia. That is the name of Revelations chapter 3, the prophecy of the Church of Philadelphia, where if I could summarize it, there's a prophecy given to seven churches of the world. Right? And six of them receive like a harsh judgment day type prophecy, you know, like fire, brimstone, you know, turbulence, drought, famine, you know. And there's only one church that receives a benevolent prophecy. And that's the Church of Philadelphia. Right? So It's not coincidental that the technology for manipulating timelines with technology was invented in a city that it itself is a attempted manipulation of prophetic timelines, you know? But electricity, right? What Franklin called his Philadelphia experiment, the computer.
And then, of course, the
Philadelphia experiment. Yeah. All of these things, it's not coincidental they're happening here.
Right.
And now we have, what they call the so-called, it's really, we call it the Mandela effect, right? But usually when we use that word effect, right, the word that precedes it is the cause of what you're observing. Like a placebo effect, you're taking a fake medicine, but it has a healing effect. Or the butterfly effect, where a butterfly flapping its wings is causing a hurricane on the other side of the planet, or whatever, right? So when we say Mandela effect, that's a misnomer, because people misremembering or re-remembering Mandela's death, that's Mandela's one of is one of the effects. You know, you might as well call it the Darth Vader effect or the Forrest Gump effect or any of the other apparent glitches in the matrix, right? But if you want to name the cause, if you want to name the root of this apparent glitch we're experiencing in our space-time reality, it should be called the Philadelphia experiment effect. And if you study the Philadelphia experiment, you know, as far as the technology, using technology, you know, electricity and computers and Tesla coils and things of that nature to, you know, change the fabric of space-time, right? And even like, well, why would you want to do that? Who's doing this? What you say, esoteric, mystical roots of this, and start studying William Penn's holy experiment as a manipulation of a prophetic timeline. It's like, my family thinks I'm crazy.
Well said, yes.
Yeah.
Hard to wrap your head around this, but I'll tell you what, you know, I've known about your work for a couple years now, and it is more than that, but it is so consistent that Philadelphia will come up in multiple unrelated areas that kind of draw the...
Bring it all together.
Right.
Yeah. It's an interesting rabbit hole, I tell you.
American cultural touch points that go back to Philadelphia. So many of them. I mean, even like...
Well, big part of this... Okay. Philadelphia is also a resurrection of Rome. Okay. And it's a resurrection of the Republic of Rome. So what does that make the United States? Being born here in Philadelphia. A resurrection of the Empire of Rome. So many of the prophetic manipulations that apply to Philadelphia really apply to the whole country of the United States. So this is like when you study, that's why we call it the Great Mystery Philadelphia, because when you really study what all this is here in Philadelphia, it reveals a greater mystery as far as like, why does the U.S. provide all of this funding and support for a Jewish state? Why are American evangelicals behind Trump attempting to fulfill these certain prophecies? What is it real is attempting to fulfill is chapter 3 in Revelation, the prophecy of the Church of Philadelphia. where you find the reference to the New Jerusalem and the temple in the New Jerusalem, you know? So understanding Philadelphia's place in prophecy and Philadelphia's place in history and mystery reveals so much of what we're seeing today that it's, you know, sometimes you got to rub the sleep out of your eyes because you almost can't believe it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's something that took me, I'll say, a few years doing this podcast to really be able to wrap my head around some of these more complicated concepts that you explain very well in your book. And this is a big part of it, timing, how things line up. And it all, I mean, it'll make your head spin how these events line up over long periods of time. You know, I wonder how the precision is maintained, you know, and you have to wonder, maybe this is why their power is what it is, whoever they is. It's because they understand timing and they find the rhythm of the.
I think if we, what do you say, follow the route to its, you know, as deep as it can go, goes back to ancient Egypt, you know? And we know they were dealing with technologies and abilities that is like, you know, we can't figure it out with our mercurial mind today. We can only imagine with our Neptunian mind what the hell these guys are dealing with, you know? And their relationship to space-time was different than ours, just like their relationship to rocks was different to ours, right? They could move megaton, super giant rocks in ways we could only imagine now, right? So they had a different relationship to the mineral world. Well, their relationship to the fabric of space-time was just as different, right? So they were able to do things. And some of the things they did are what put us on this timeline. That's why it's relevant, right? But yeah, they were able to do things that, you know, your family would think you're crazy if you talked about it today, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You'd even question your own sanity, you know?
It's happened on this podcast for sure.
Yeah.
Now, we just had a great conversation on this show with Dr. Joseph P. Farrell. Are you familiar with his work at all?
No, I'm not.
So he's written a really great series of books titled The Giza Death Star, Giza Death Star Returned, etc., right? And
okay,
one of his main theories or hypotheses around the Great Pyramid is that it's a vessel, it's a container for sort of plasma energy. And, you know, a lot of this stuff is way out of my technical abilities to be able to articulate. But it seemed like what he was saying is that at certain times of the year, the energy is such on the planet where the pyramid can actually become possessed by one of these entities, if not perpetually afterwards possessed by it. But as somebody who has such an intimate knowledge of mineralogy and you've studied Egyptian culture, I'm curious what your take on that is. Because, you know, I don't know that I've heard you ever talk about it. And I like to, you know, contrast and compare what my guests say. So, yeah, any thoughts on that?
Well, I would say that there is a energy takeover on planet Earth. Like one's attempting to, we say, control the energy grid of the planet, right? And that the Giza complex is an important nodal point in the grid to control. That if you could control that point, you could control a lot of the matrix, right? And that battle goes back to, like I say, the wars of the Nile Valley, you know, what, 5,000 years ago. And even their prehistoric chapters, you know. And if you, what do you say, I'm not going to say believe the cosmologies, but if you study the cosmologies, right? Many of the cosmologies would affirm that and say, like, you know, that, for example, they say the Bennu stone, Bennu stone, which was the original capstone on top of the pyramid. We know when we see some depictions of a pyramid, you see a separated capstone with an eye on it, right? So originally that was called the Bennu stone, right? And it was supposedly, like, you know, if you want to, what you say, interpret the cosmology from a Western perspective, we would say it was of extraterrestrial origin that was probably as old as creation, you know? It was supposedly laid, an egg that was laid by the Bennu bird, right? Who would be like, I would say in Greco-Roman symbolism, like a phoenix, okay? A bird of fire, right? That kind of is risen up from its own ashes cyclically, right? But the thing with the Bennu bird is it's very old. It's very ancient, meaning in the cosmology, they say the Bennu bird was like, you know, like born with creation, you know? And so the Bennu stone that used to sit atop of the pyramid was the Bennu's egg, right? And in the Nile Valley, it's legend that there was a war to get control of that. And that egg had to be like hidden in the earth, you know, so certain forces couldn't get a hold of it, you know, because if certain forces got a hold of it, it wouldn't be good for the earth as a whole, or, you know, humanity as a collective, you know, they'd be able to do a lot of, like, their intention of what they had planned and how they were moving. If they got a hold of this, it would be like, you know, putting a submachine gun in a toddler's hands or something, you know, like, oh my gosh, the destruction that they would unleash would, you know. So they hid the Bennu stone deep in the earth. I'm not aware that it's been found even today. It's be interesting. I have been keeping my eye out for it. I don't think they found it yet.
Yeah. Well, on that note, you know, it feels like the missing capstone is a key component to how the pyramid functions as a purely material sort of thing. I don't think of it in terms of just material. I think there's
I would affirm that, right? Whatever function, whatever purpose was tied in with the Great Pyramid when it was created and, like, doing its thing, you know, not just sitting around as an artifact, but a big part of it was that Bennu stone being there.
Right.
And
now, you know, we look at a place like the Giza complex from above, from our modern minds, we think of computer chips, right? I mean, some of the maps you can see, not just the Egyptian pyramid complex, but the Mesoamerican pyramid complexes, they have this gridding and it looks very reminiscent to how we arrange computer chips. And
I would affirm that.
Yeah, I feel like that. And when you look at American cities, and you've done work on this, Philadelphia has a unique, we'll call it structure, the way it's formed. I think a lot of attention goes to Washington, D.C. and all the pentagrams.
Exactly. There. You're right. A lot of attention goes there. But if you really want to understand, if you really want to comprehend the deeper mysteries of the United States, you got to look beyond Washington, D.C. You got to look beyond that Masonic wearing, you know, the Masonic outfit.
And let me ask you this then, considering what we just laid out, the Giza pyramid complex is sort of like disengaged. The key that keeps to, that allows it to function has been taken off of it and hidden away because the whole complex is too powerful. Is there a similar, an analogous structure in a city like Philadelphia? Is there a component? You know, my mind goes to like, typically the Capitol building will have a gold dome on the top of it. You look at any Capitol building.
What I would correspond as far as ancient megaliths and monoliths that are like offline, and if they were online, maybe they would like the whole vibe on the earth would be like very different, is the church complexes at Lalibela. Okay. So now if you study Lalibela, right, it's 11 rocking churches, right? And so Lalibela was similar to Enoch. Some angels came to earth and took him to the heavens to show him certain visions. But unlike Enoch, where angels took Enoch through the first through seventh heavens, according to Lalibela's chronicles, he was only taken to the third heaven, okay? But at the third heaven, he was given some specific instructions upon what he was supposed to do when he was taken back to earth. And one of those instructions was to build 12 rock-hewn churches to make the New Jerusalem, okay? So this is chronicled in an Ethiopian manuscript called the Chronicles of Lalibela, for those who want to follow up on this, okay? So now, when Lalibela came back to earth, he started his mission of building 12 rocking churches that were going to be the New Jerusalem. Right? And apparently, not only did the angels give Lalibela that instruction, right? They would come down and help him, right? So they say Lalibela's masons and workers worked alongside of angels, right? Half of the debt. But then, of course, they had to eat and sleep. But the angels didn't need to eat or sleep. So they would work continuously and would get twice as much accomplished without Lalibela's masons in the way, right? That's how they, what, in 27 years, they made 11 monolithic structures, right? If you have studied the churches of Lalibela, they're amazing. It's like, how'd y'all do this in 27 years, right? But something happened where Lalibela didn't get to finish his initial assignment of making 12. Right? What if he had been able to make 12 of those rocking churches and they became the New Jerusalem? You know? What would the frequency and the harmonic be on planet Earth right now? You know, would this, is it real prophetic trickery be able to be happening now? Will Philadelphia, the prophetic trickery of Philadelphia, been able to occur? You know, so it's just a food for thought, you know? And I would say, if you say, well, because the mason, the architecture in Philly is interesting and mysterious, but I don't see no old world megalithic, monolithic architecture here that would be, you know, impacting the earth grid like that.
Okay. Can you see what I'm sharing right now, Ross?
Not clearly.
Okay, so we've talked a little bit about New Haven the last time you were on the show, but
Yes.
I've eaten at this Ethiopian restaurant before. It was established in 1999. I don't think that's a coincidence. But
Okay.
look at the logo with the two black pyramids as the A, Lalibela, right? Now this is on Temple Street in New Haven, and I firmly believe that Yale is a big part of this whole.
They know what it is.
And look at where Lalibela is located. So this is Temple Street. This is the New Haven Green with its sort of pentagram arrangement, and then there's Yale University around it. But this is where Lalibela is, right on Temple Street, right in this geomantic arrangement that they have in New
Now,
Haven's nine square
to
grid.
relate this to some things I've observed in Washington, D.C. as
Please
of
tell.
late. Who's in D.C. right now? As far as like just living there, working there,
Right.
who are who? Ethiopians. Why and how? You know? And I do think they're kind of being used by, let's say, Lalibela did work with these angelic forces, and these angelic forces are the quote unquote extraterrestrial forces we're seeing so much evidence of, right? Wouldn't you want to create a human shield? You know, surround yourself with ones they would consider their allies and their children, and ones that they wouldn't want to harm. Wouldn't you want to, you know, create that human shield? When we go to DC now, all we see is Ethiopians and Ethiopian restaurants and Ethiopians working and, you know, all in the nation's capital. Why? Out of all the different ones in the world that are all caught up in the economy of the West and they could have over here doing those works. Why is it Ethiopians? You know? Question. I just, you know, observation, right? Like if you want to tie it into what we're talking about, you know?
I think there's something strange going on there, you know, and I'm sure there's other Ethiopian restaurants in Connecticut, but that's the only one I know in New Haven, 1999. I didn't realize that's when it opened. That's it. Now I'm even more suspicious. But yeah, I think as far as America goes, New Haven, Philadelphia, see, there's this ley line that author Peter Shampoo calls the Empire Ley Line, and it goes through these cities. It also goes through Boston as well. Right? So, yeah, there's something going on with this arrangement. I know we've talked about it before on the show, so I don't want to go and retread old track,
Well, what
but
I will say, if you
yeah,
don't mind,
go ahead.
your research on New Haven was impressive.
Thank you.
Okay. And it was funny where, right, we had met, but when I saw your research online, I didn't connect it with you. I didn't connect it with the person we had met through our connection. Brother Mike Wan, salute,
Shout
you
out.
know?
Yes.
And I was just like, yo. This man has decoded New Haven Like, you know, he's freeing his mound up there, you know? And then, right, you told me after subsequently I used for your mound is like the tool of shaping my perspective of decoding. And it was like, yeah, it was obvious, right? But I'm just bringing that up in the context that both Philadelphia and New Haven, a big part of the intention built into it is to be, what you say, a harbor place, a safe place, a place where you can witness Judgment Day, but not cast the judgment, you know? And there's a lot with that because there were, like, when the ones who were initially wanting to create, what you say, a prophetic safety net for themselves as a part of their harbor place, right? They were pirates, you know? So the deeper you dig into this, you get into this pirate legacy of the Northeast United States, which they really try to bury. You know, you don't think of a pirate legacy when you think of Yale or Harvard or Philadelphia, you know, but when you, because New Haven's a harbor city, right?
The word haven means harbor in the Old English
Harbor,
language.
yes.
Yeah, it's
The
absolutely.
New Haven, Connecticut, and its pirate legacy is a rabbit hole that when you go down it, you'll find this connection where these pirates, William Markham is Philadelphia's pirate to study. You know, if y'all saying like, what the hell are you talking? You must be crazy, right? You study William Markham, who was Pennsylvania's first governor, and he was William Penn's cousin. And 'cause see, at Pennsylvania, Penn's Woods weren't given to the William Penn that w most of people are familiar with. Pennsylvania was given to his father, Admiral Penn, who was a privateer. Okay. You know, we know there's a subtle but profound difference between a privateer and a pirate, right? Who you're working for, right? If you work for the Sultan of Morocco, you're a pirate. But if you're working for the King of England, you're a privateer, right?
It's like
You know how
today,
that goes down,
yeah,
right?
if you're in the US Army, you're a soldier, but if you're a jihadi, you're a
You're a
terrorist.
terrorist.
Right,
There
yeah,
you go.
exactly.
There you go. So Pennsylvania was given to Admiral Penn, William Penn's father, because as a privateer, he took the island of Jamaica away from the Spanish. It's very important historical, you know, like. And you say, well, why is it important? Because the United States was born out of Pennsylvania and Philadelphia. And so if you don't know what Pennsylvania itself was born out of, you know, you're going to miss half the story that's never been told, you know? So Admiral Penn was a pirate. He was a privateer. You know, that's what he valued in life, you know? He liked being around. He was a big money maritime man, and he liked being around other big money maritime men, right? You could say the William Penn that we all kind of know about and hear the myth about Penn's Landing and Penn's Treaty and all that. You could say he was a bohemian. Bohemian. Meaning, he studied the teachings that spread out from Jacob Boehme, okay, who basically, like a bohemian back then, was like a bohemian now, like a hippie, you know, someone who was trying to live natural and, you know, peace and love and You know, so Admiral Penn and his son William Penn didn't get along. Okay. It was like, you know, William Penn would say, yeah, my family thinks I'm crazy. You know what I'm saying? Right? Admiral Penn be like, yo, my son, that mother crazy. You know? So Admiral Penn had reluctance about turning over his payment for taking Jamaica away from the Spanish to his son. Wanted to put it in the hands of someone who had values more like he did, right? William Markham, who was, for lack of a better word, you could say a Rosicrucian pirate. Okay? Meaning he knew the mysteries of the Rosy Cross. He knew the mysteries. He was a student of history, mystery, and prophecy. But he was also a pirate, you know? And that had him do some wild stuff with history, mystery, and prophecy related to Pennsylvania. And all this is relevant because this is what the United States is born out of. This is what Pennsylvania, you know, like you got to know this angle if you really want to know the great mystery of Philadelphia, you know?
All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's take a quick moment to pay the bills and thank the sponsors. Remember, you can support me directly by signing up on Patreon. That's patreon.com/mftic or myfamilythinksimcrazy.substack.com. I also have merch available that is handmade by yours truly. I'm screen printing some really awesome designs, and I'm going to be coming up with some more new designs in the future, so be on the lookout, stay updated, because the Jeffrey Epstein What List shirt is not going to be around. Supplies are limited, and after I make the next 10 Washington DC map shirts, I'm not going to make any more. So if you would like to get one, place your order now. And yeah, big shout out to our sponsors. We've got Vibe Med X, your number one source for Shilajit. Make sure you go to vibemedx.com to get the highest quality source of Shilajit in the USA. It's coming from a very special location in Russia. So if you're interested in Shilajit, check out vibemedx.com. We've also got Brain Supreme. Brain Supreme is your team for microdosing. They've got your back. All the info you could ever want when it comes to microdosing, they will help you. Go and check it out. Adam, the CEO and founder of Brain Supreme, has been on the show several times. Look him up, Adam Schell. If you're interested in microdosing and what it can do for you, he knows and he can coach you through it. So go and check out all of the resources available at brainsupreme.co and be sure to use the promo code CRAZY at checkout. And finally, my favorite tech sponsor we've ever had, the only tech sponsor we've ever had, I guess, unless you count Raw Optics, which those are incredible. Get yourself a pair of Raw Optics sunglasses. But the Above Phone is your resource. They are helping you out by creating an option for you to get above and beyond surveillance. That's right. These phones are not going to spy on you. So stop what you're doing and reconsider all of the apps, all of the strange little agreements that you've agreed to on your phone. Above Phone is going to help you delete all of that with the click of one button. That's right. You switch your phone over to your phone plan over to an Above Phone phone and say goodbye to being spied on. It's that simple. Go to abovephone.com, check out my interview with the CEO and founder, Hakeem Anwar, and use the promo code CRAZY at checkout when getting yourself a phone, tablet, or laptop. All right. Thank you for listening to this show. We've got some more ads we're going to go to, and then we'll be right back to this conversation with Ross Ben. Remember, sign up on patreon.com/mftic or myfamilythinksimcrazy.substack.com to get every episode of this podcast ad-free and interruption-free. All right. Hey, everybody, this is Mystic Mark, the host of My Family Thinks I'm Crazy, and I gotta pay my bills, so here I am compromising my integrity to tell you about Hims. And listen, you don't have to compromise your routine with Hims. You don't have to take time out of your busy schedule. Just do it all online from the comfort of your home. What are you doing? You're getting treated for erectile dysfunction. Why do you have erectile dysfunction? I don't know. Maybe there are other issues in your life that you should address first before going straight to pharmaceuticals. But if you're there and you've tried everything else and you really just want to make your lady happy, which I'm a guy, I get it, man. We got to make the ladies happy. That's how the world goes around. When women are happy, the world keeps turning. So get that edge you need in the bedroom with Hims. Use the promo code CRAZY at checkout. That's hims.com/crazy for your free online visit. hims.com/crazy to get simple online access to personalized, affordable care for ED, hair loss, weight loss, and more. Visit hims.com/crazy. Here comes the fun part. Actual price will depend on product and subscription plan. Featured products include compounded drug products, which the FDA does not approve or verify for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. See website for details, restrictions, and important safety information. Doo-doo-doo. Thank you, Hims. Now I can go buy more weed and smoke it, stoner, dude. Just kidding. I'm literally paying my electric bill, my insurance bill. I'm dying over here. Support me on Patreon, patreon.com/mftic.
Look, if you're still buying weed from some guy named Trevor in a parking lot, you're doing it wrong. Mood.com delivers legal THC products straight to your door. Gummies, vapes, flower, the good stuff. No sketchy DMs, no med card. Just add to cart, check out, and boom, it's at your doorstep. It's legal in all 50 states thanks to the Farm Bill, and Mood's products actually work. Seriously, this isn't gas station garbage. It's small batch, lab-tested, real results. Go to Mood.com, use code FIRST20 for 20% off, and never run dry again. That's Mood.com. Go get lit, legally.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
It's a big part of it, absolutely. And right down to the Jolly Roger and the Skull and Bones flag. I mean, it's right there in your face. And
right there in your face.
The taverns that the Patriots of the Revolution were going to.
Right. Why would they always meet in a bar? And what was up with that? And yeah.
Yeah. It's a big part of the American culture that they don't emphasize when they teach us our history, but they do. You know, you go to any seaport on the East Coast.
And why it's relevant is because, like the Epstein Diddy stuff we see today,
right?
The Macron stuff we see today, which is related with the real crazy thing I'm about to say. You know, when we're ready, when you get into like, why does it appear those in power are weird? What the hell? Like, you know, what's up with them? What's up with these dudes, right? Got to go back to the foundations of their power structure, colonial and neo-colonial, you know? And these is the things you uncover, you know? A Rosicrucian pirate is going to cook up some wild stuff, you know? You can believe it, right?
Absolutely.
And yeah, that's what it is.
There's a rich folklore around this, and it really, I mean, the more you learn about maritime culture, the more you see how fixated it is on really pagan superstitious practices. There's all these superstitious things sailors do before they go out. I mean, the whole
take it back to its ultimate root, the Nile Valley, the wars in the Nile Valley, which we was talking about, the Titan alchemy, right? The maritime netter responsible for a lot of the piracy and the ultimate ones they, what you say, pay homage or worship to. His Egyptian name was Harishab, okay? But he was expelled out of the Nile Valley after the first intermediate period, right? By the 11th dynasty, the dynasties of Montu Hotep, right? But if you expel a maritimer, what's he going to do? He's just going to go and sail and set up in another land, right? So this Harishap maritime, like we say, the first pirates, right? They went, once they got expelled out of the Nile Valley in the 11th dynasty, they started posting up throughout the Mediterranean world. And their biggest city, most important city, is where this deity got the name it's known by, and that's Baal. So Baalbek was the biggest city that this one named Harishab set up once he fled from the Nile Valley. Right? And we know ball ain't cool. We know we don't want to be ballers. You know? Like, ball is, you know, Marduk and got a whole lot of, you know, we say devilish, demonic, satanic attributes attached to it. He's also the Greek or the Grecian Hercules. This is where it kind of bleeds into America, right? Because everybody wants to be in the West, in this Greco-Roman West, everybody wants to be Hercules. Everybody wants to be the man on top. Everybody wants to be the leader, you know, a Herculean god. And what do they offer to Hercules? Children. This is the, what you say, cosmological, archetypical, mythological roots of what these boys is dealing with, right? Baal and Hercules, Harishab, you know? And they do it in subtle but not so subtle ways, you know? In antiquity, they used to give up their own children, right? The whole, what was it, the Cassiopeia, Cepheus, Andromeda narrative, where when King Cepheus, the king of Ethiopia, was his empire was being threatened by the Kraken. What'd he do? He tied up his own daughter on the rocks for, you know, as a sacrifice so the Kraken would leave his kingdom alone. And then Perseus came and freed her, right? So back in the day, they used to give up their own children. This was the whole paradigm Abraham was facing in the Bible when it was like, hey, Abraham, give up your own youth. And Abraham had to think and was like, nah, I'm cool. Something ain't right with this, right? This was, how the ancient rulers was moving, right? And so it moved in time, though, that by Greco-Roman antiquity, Greco-Roman times, they started giving up and offering the children of others, right? A good historic example of that. If you say, oh, Rospin, you crazy, right? Study the Roman Emperor Hadrian, okay? And study his, we say, Hadrian's little boy he sexually manipulated and ultimately sacrificed and killed. His name was Antoninus. So you could study Hadrian, the Emperor Hadrian, and Antoninus. Okay? And he's an example of a Herculean emperor who sacrificed not his own child, but just a little boy he picked up, from off the street, sexually groomed, and then took him out, So these are the, when one say, well, where are the roots of what the hell we're seeing today? Is this even like real? Or, I even think I'm crazy thinking, looking at some of this stuff. It can't be, it's outrageous, That's one of the ways to get away with it because it seems outrageous. But then if you study that, we say roots of antiquity, right? Then you can, we say, perceive and get an idea of like what's motivating a lot of this. Like, oh, this thing is, ones empowered have done this since the first pirates, going back into the Nile Valley, 10th dynasty, 9th dynasty, 8th dynasty characters, these Herrschaft characters, these Herculean characters, these Baal characters, So,
Yeah, the modern parallels are flat. They're astounding because you see all these things today, and without the history, mystery, and prophecy backing up your understanding and overstanding of these things, you're just like, no way, that's impossible. People aren't
Exactly.
evil, right?
Exactly.
That's, I mean, I don't
That's
even
you.
try
That would
to.
be anyone's natural
Right.
initial reaction. If someone came and started dropping these truths on you, you'd be like, "What?
Right. I
Bill
don't.
Clinton did what?
Yeah.
So and so did what? Get out of here!"
I don't think most people want to even broach such uncomfortable topics with their family in the first place, unless it somehow comes up organically. It's a very difficult thing to bring up in the first place,
Absolutely.
So yeah, I think that
Absolutely. It's so
works in,
bizarre. It's
well,
so
and it works
twisted.
in the favor of the criminals and the perpetuators of these evil deeds to help keep their, coercion and subterfuge hidden. But it also, obviously the blackmail aspect of it that we all know too well because of how transparent all of this nonsense has been with Epstein and now with Sean Combs and I mean, Ellen, Ghislaine Maxwell, like
This
there's all
does kind of
these
tie in, this leads into what I did want to
Yeah, let's
drop on one, so I don't know if this is
hit
a good
us. Yeah,
time.
this is the time, Ross. Please take your
Right. I
time.
just want to say this because I like if it doesn't happen, people could just say, oh, well, I see why that guy's family thinks he's crazy. And, He was on My Family Thinks He's. He was even questioning his own sanity. Did he think he was crazy?
You're safe.
You know, so, you know, but paying attention to what's going on in the world today. I want to say it because if it comes to pass, like, holy cow, right? I do want to record it like, dang, that crazy nigga Ross been said this shit, right? I'm sorry if I don't know how you do profanity, but.
Oh,
you
it's know, fine. Yeah, we've heard it all.
Laughing, thinking how, like, I do think I'm crazy even for saying this. I do.
Well, don't worry. You're safe with us. I think the audience is talking.
Our families think we crazy out here, right?
They're talking to themselves while listening to the podcast. So how crazy are they? At least you and I are having a conversation.
Yeah. But I think paying attention to what I've been seeing in the world today, right? That Candace Owens is fulfilling the biblical prophecy of the woman in the wilderness, the woman clothed with the sun, that takes the deceiver of the nations and throws them in the abyss and brings about 1,000 years of peace. She's fulfilling that prophecy. She's playing that role where a woman clothed with the sun, in other words, a black woman in the wilderness, in the woods of Tennessee out this month, she's shaking up the world. Her angle got President Trump calling her, got the Macrons, you know, like sweating in their boots. And her, you know, I'm not a Catholic, you know, I'm not like of her religion or whatever, but it's beyond religion. If you are a student of history, mystery, and prophecy, and you're just paying attention to what's going on in the world, right? It's like, holy cow. Holy. And where is it going? Like, we see where she's at with it, right? Got the Macrons exposed. Got the Macrons taking her to court in Delaware, right? If you want to take the, like the, what you say, Franco-American roots of Delaware to its roots. And the Franco-American relationship to Pennsylvania and Delaware to its roots. It's all about the Delaware, which is a French title, which the governors of this region also wore, okay? That's what the Delaware is, okay? And that's, you know, if one say, well, why they bring it to a court? They don't even have jurisdiction over her. It was a stupid move, right? They wanted to hold court in a court that they feel historically they have leverage in, you know? So they don't got no leverage in the courts in Tennessee, even though Tennessee has jurisdiction over Candace Owens, right? So meaning they can enforce a verdict. Even if the Macrons take Candace to court in Delaware and rule in their favor, Delaware has no jurisdiction to enforce any ruling over Candace, right? They're not a federal court, and Candace don't live or do no business in that state. Right? So the chess and checkers of it is intriguing, you know? Mm. And I'm not going to go all down that rabbit. It's just kind of what you say is like, you know, how there's been a trend on TV for the real life dramas. Mm-hmm. Like, what do they call it? Is that what they call it?
Yeah, like reality television.
Reality TV. Yeah. Like this Candace Owens thing is reality TV. It's so entertaining.
Yeah.
You know that I haven't been so entertained even by something, what they say, fictional, something made out of Hollywood or whatever. I haven't been entertained by anything like this in a very long time, And when you say, well, yo, this is real life, and you get into it from, we say a Great Mystery Philadelphia angle. It's like, holy cow. Holy cow. This is, I wanted to say, like, I think she's fulfilling prophecy. I think she's the woman of the wilderness, that she's the woman clothed with the sun in biblical prophecy, who's going to take the deceiver of the nations and throw them in the bottomless pit and bring about the fulfillment of the 1,000 years of peace, millennial prophecy, because, right, y'all could think I'm crazy or whatever, and if it don't come to pass, I'm sitting here smoking a spliff, just busting it up with y'all, saying some crazy shit, whatever,
Right.
right? What time might tell? Time might tell, like, damn. As a student of history, mystery, and prophecy, 40 years, I wouldn't be surprised if this is it. I ain't seen no woman clothed with the sun. I ain't seen no woman from the wilderness even wrestle with the deceiver of the nations like she is. And the way, the leverage she has on them right now, she's going to throw them in the bottomless pit and bring about 1,000 years of peace. She got them sweating. She ain't sweating. She got a smile on her face. I'm doing right. She on God's on her side. It's like, holy cow. I just wanted to, like, that's the only reason why I agreed to come on your show, brother. Because, like I said, I haven't been active on the outer net. I don't have a whole lot to say, right?
I would
I
bet.
wanted to say that and have it documented
I'm glad
before it go down, So one could say, like, damn, Ross Ben called it.
I'm Thank you. And I would say you have so much to say and so much wisdom, but I totally respect the time that you're taking for yourself. So it's even more of an honor to host your thoughts here. But yeah, I'm curious because when we were talking a little bit about pirates, I felt like you were sort of insinuating something. And in my mind, Chris Knowles's work on the siren and the mermaids came up, Macrone and his whole strange relationship that, Candace Owens is sort of ripping at the seams of and exposing potentially a very telling truth that
Yes.
might implicate not just Macrone, but this entire
Has
cult.
global implications, man.
Right. This great cult. And it has transhumanism written all over it. I mean,
Oh my gosh.
when
If
you
you
look at
go
the
down
Talmud.
it, if that's what I'm saying, like if
Yeah.
you pull back that veil and really start like taking it to its roots, oh my God.
Well, and does it relate to this whole transhumanism conversation? Because I feel like with everything going on with Macron, there's the attempt to make it seem, like it's, what would you say? Oh, they're just crass and they don't respect the LGBTQ, but really
Yes.
there's something much deeper there. I mean, you
There
look
is
at the
something much
culture
deeper. We'll take
war.
it back to the
Yeah.
wars of the Nile Valley.
Please do.
There was another, what you say, rebel netter, or another titan, if you want, look at it from the lens of the Titanakam, which was basically an account, and if you want to use the Grecian term, the wars against the Titans against the Olympians. Okay. And so, in real life, historically, archaeologically, It was the wars between the Memphites and the Thebans. The Thebans were the Olympians. The Memphites were the Titans. Okay. We've already talked about Herodias and her, who was, you know, we know more of as Hercules and Baal. He was one of these rebel Netter. But another was Ptah. Okay. And Ptah seemed hellbent on genetic manipulation. That was his thing. Manipulating the gene pool to make the like super soldier, to make the, you know, ultimate slave, to make the, you know, all these themes we see in genetic manipulation today, right? If we study the Titanotomy and we study the what actually happened in the Nile Valley, knowing it was the Memphites versus the Thebans, right? One of these Titans, the one who was really into like manipulating the gene pool, right? Taking us out of our, well, we could say taking us out of our Adamic state, you know, our, like how we lived like Adam and Eve in the garden, you know, like changing that, you know, changing us from, if you want to put it in now valley terms, taking out us out of our Osirian state, our, you know, Osiris, who, if we want to say, was like, he was the Netter who, or the lifestyle creator that would keep us in our natural state, you know, in our Edenic state, in our Adamic state, you know, where like we could live one with nature. And we all know there's a part of us that that's what we want, you know? Like, there's a part of us that, like, you know, get in the air conditioner is cool when it's real hot, and having the push button reality that you, you know, you can push a button and get whatever you want, like, boop, you know, dang near instantly, right? But then a part of you know, like, this shit ain't right. So, you know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. I don't.
If you were in touch with yourself, if you're in touch with yourself a little bit, that part of you is going to be like, this ain't right.
Right.
It's not. What was the keyword they used? They sustainable. It's a whole lot that comes with it.
Yeah.
You know? Well, being attached to your cell phone with all your moves, it's like,
yeah,
you know, you're agreeing to your self-reporting, self-surveillance,
yeah,
you know, you're paying for it, you know, like, you know, we're in a weird place in space and time because it's kind of like like we say, time for this technology thing is kind of running out. Either we embrace our Osirian, Edenic, Adamic self, right? And live with the earth, with this like separated reality from nature, we could see Mother Earth is like, yeah, guess what? Psh, 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 time's up, right? The climate, what they call climate change, global warming, you know, earth changes, and things is real. We see it, you know? Yeah. Both my mother's home and my wife's mother's home got flooded. within the past month, you know? And it's real. You name someone, you name a region that's not being touched and affected by what they call earth change. You know? And so it's just such an interesting time to be alive. And I don't pretend to know how it's going to go down or what's going to go down, but I am paying attention. And I've already shared what I think is, like we say, the most relevant thing to pay attention to right now, Candace Owens. As crazy as that sounds, you know, as crazy as it sounds, it's, I think, what it is, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I've heard crazier on this show, Ross. So honestly,
all right. All right.
I think
maybe I'm not that crazy. Time will tell.
Yeah. Well, and your work stands for itself as well. Like, aside from what you've said today on this podcast, like, any one of your books is jam packed with its own unique variety of wisdom that I think, you know, when you put out work like yours, it takes on a life of its own, where it then begins to go find people in their life and meet them where they're at and help them on their journey. And that's what your book, Great Mystery Philadelphia, did for me in a big
way. Great Mystery does have a life of its own. You're right. Because it's so funny that I would say Great Mystery has brought me more problems and troubles and blessings so far. Like, I've had to learn the hard way, which I guess one would say experientially, that some truths are best left unarticulated, you know, because the opposition one might receive saying such a thing, they weren't built to receive, you know, they didn't even factor it, they didn't think about it. It just, you know, maybe, and that's, or maybe this should have been like forethought, like a real, like, man, you saying these things, what's going to mean for you and your family, you know? And yeah, like, great, but, and at the same, in saying that, right, there was a point where I was avoiding talking about the great mystery, right? Like, I was just like, yeah, I'm gonna just back up off of that, you know? We'll fall into just, you know, talking about crystals or, you know, whatever, right? But the great mystery got a life of its own. Like you say, there's ones that, yo, like yourself, like the work you did in New Haven, like, look at these portals, look, you know, look at this, look, boop, 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 you know? So, and I even, when I paid attention to Candace Owens, and I saw the work she was doing, it's like parallel to the Great Mystery in a lot of levels, you know? And that it's got a life of its own, like you say, you know? It's got a life of its own. And I am intrigued to see where it's going to go. And I'm going to be ready for it, you know? I'm going to be ready for it. Yeah.
Right on. Well, we're approaching about the time that we set up. I don't want to take all of your day, Ross. You've already been kind enough to wait for me for the late start there. And
no worries, man.
Yeah.
Hey, steady on your good works. When I grow up, I'm going to be just like you. Thank you for allowing us to, you know, we say, get online, right? And share what's on my heart. I don't take it for granted. And what was your friend's name? Who you would come down here with?
Oh, Tara. Yeah, me and Tara.
Yeah, I wish y'all the best.
Thank you.
Love, honor, and respect.
Yeah.
Steady on your good works. When I grow up, I'm gonna be just like you.
Thank you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Tara,
Salute.
Tara and I talk about your work all the time. She is a big fan of yours. Big shout out to Tara. We love you, Tara.
Yes, yes.
And yeah, and we got to come back down to Philadelphia again to spread some peace and anchor this message, you know, and keep building the positive. Because one of the things that, and just to really quickly put a bow on this, one of the things that you said today that really stuck with me is how Philadelphia, New Haven, some of these other places are like safe harbors, safe havens.
Yes. Yes.
Part of this work, I think, is to start to bring positive energy into safe harbors so that negative, evil entity, this force, cannot use it as its, you know, hiding place.
They're intending. Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah. Let it be a force.
I affirm that.
People.
Yeah. I affirm that. This is a important. It's easy to overlook where you're at and think you got to go to Sedona, or you got to go to Machu Picchu, or you got to go to some, you know, we say touristy energy spot on planet. You got to go to Giza. You got to, you know, it's got to be
wherever you are right now.
Yeah. Study where you're at.
Yeah.
Don't take it for granted. You're going to find what?
Well, and the other thing too, Ross, that you brought this to the forefront for me in many ways is that you don't have to be anywhere but where you are to affect change in the rest of the world, right? And I don't think, you know, if more people thought like that, we would live in a better place, you know? So
give thanks, brother.
Give thanks to you, Ross, because
yeah.
You're on a powerful journey and you're helping others wake up to their potential to step into their powerful journey. And we're all meant to do that. So if you're listening to this and you feel that spark in your heart, follow it. Find Ross Ben's work. It's available wherever you listen to podcasts. You search his name. He's been on some of the best podcasts around. He's got tons of wisdom to share there. And of course, he's got books available. Ross, where's the best place for people to support you, even if they just want to send you like some money?
Right now, my website is down, I think.
Right.
Okay. Like I said, I've had to fall back.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I know how supportive the audience is, and if there are people who want to support you directly, they can reach out to me through my Instagram, and I will share your email with
them.
There
we go.
So you can contact them, or they can contact you, and I'll I won't put your email out for everybody, but for the right people who want to support Ross, just send me a message. I'll connect you with Ross, and I don't know if I have friends who could help you with this, but we would love to see more of your books printed. So if there's any way for that to happen,
I have a vision to like get back online and get more active and
cool.
You know.
Well, when you do, please be in touch because I would love to help as
well. Thank you, brother. Thank you. What an honor.
No, likewise.
Well, all right, good brother. Well,
thank you so much for tuning into this episode. Give thanks to Ross Ben. And until next episode, immerse yourself in the moment wherever you are in the now. All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning in to this episode of the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast. Such a privilege to have the great Ross Ben back on the show. As you may have noticed or heard him mention, he has not been doing much in the public eye lately. He has not been posting in his usual places lately. He had some setbacks and the loss of his son, which is never easy. So thoughts and prayers and much love to
our friend Ross Ben and his late son. And my heart goes out to anyone who's lost a loved one. As anyone who listens carefully to the podcast, you know I lost my grandmother this year, and sadly my my uncle's mother, who I affectionately called Grandma Claire, even though she wasn't my actual grandmother. She passed away this past month, so that was another passing. So my thoughts and prayers to them, to Ross's son, and to any of your loved ones who might have passed away this year. Somber summer, but it's been sweet too. Bittersweet, I guess, would be the phrase. I got to hang out with my sister and some of her friends last night. That was incredible. There, she's got a great group of gal pals there, and just been doing some really awesome stuff with clothing. So if you'd like to learn more about that, that was a weird way to say that. if you'd like to hear more about that or see more about that, go on my Instagram at My Family Thinks I'm Crazy, and I'm also posting stuff on Patreon as well. I've made a lot of a lot of shirts, so let's sell them, folks. Go to the merch store and pick up your own shirt while it's still available. Support the show with some My Family Thinks I'm Crazy merch. All right, that's it for this episode. Big shout out to Ross Ben, and until next episode, immerse yourself in the moment wherever you are, in the now.